Hello everyone and welcome to our next episode of Blog Tales Unchained Stories. My name is Katharina Zeuch and I'm the founder of Lunar Vision, and today I have with me Maximilian Gutsche. Max, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes. Yeah, I'm Max. I'm from the south of Germany and I do a bunch of things. I've been a product manager forever. Now, like, more a tokenomics designer, consultant, whatever you want to call it. I also have a community of token researchers, so we're trying basically to analyze, you know, like, if tokens have any value or not. And yeah, I live in Mainz now.
Already, that's so it. Many words that not everyone understands. So let's start with the question: how would you explain your everyday life in Web3 to your grandma without the words?
Yeah, so I would basically tell her, or that's also what I have to tell anyone in my family. So I design economies, but digitally. So I design the, you know, like the, I don't know, the resources and how the actors work together in an, you know, virtual economy, basically. So, and that's actually working quite well so far.
But I have to admit, if I wouldn't understand the ecosystem, then, like, I design economy sounds like a huge goal. Like, wow, we have a worldwide global economy and we're like for goods and you're designing something like this. It's like, don't you overwhelm your parents or your grandma with this
bit? Yeah, usually then I have to tell them, look, it could be like a game. So there's constraints. So there's like different, you know, limitations to that overall economy. But I always tell, like, hey, there's like the functions of like a real economy. So there's like value creation, there's some labor involved, you know, there's capital flowing in. So usually people have no idea how about an economy works, but, you know, like the fundamental things is like, you know, labor, capital, resources, some form of value creation. And then there's the money involved. And then this is usually where people are like, yeah, cool, interesting. Let's switch to another topic.
So basically you're used to not being understood. How did you end up there? Why? Why do you do this to yourself?
That's a good question. So it's a very good question because it's also very painful. And, you know, like, I would never say that I can do it by myself. You know, like, the task of designing even a game economy is too complex for me. And, like, I need a second pair of eyes or a third to look through it. And I basically, you know, like, I started 2017, shitcoin, unsuccessful shitcoin investor. And then I thought, like, but some, you know, some cryptocurrencies, back then it was just cryptocurrencies, were like super valuable and others weren't. And then I looked into ICOs and, you know, like, read a bunch of white papers. And sometimes I thought, like, yeah, okay, it's a cool idea. Like, I could see this working. Like, the rest is hot air. And then I was like, okay, like, why, like, is there a business model behind it? And I was always interested in business models. And then I was like, okay, like, these networks make sense. So platforms like Airbnb and stuff, they created huge value. I assume you want to do something, you know, a bit more decentralized. And yeah, through DeFi Summer, then, like, tokenomics came up and I was like, okay, I read all these white papers. I kind of know the mechanics that are in there. And then people, you know, put a name on it, how you can design it. And I was like, yeah, just a nice, interesting intellectual challenge. So
if you're allowed to say, what was the first project, the first tokenomics ecosystem that hooked you?
I think it was generally like something like ETH was always interesting because, like, they were the first, like, to figure out, you know, like, how to find innovation and then, you know, the merge and stuff. But, you know, also things like, you know, like Curve and some of the DeFi protocols, they kind of found ways to, okay, especially Maker, obviously. I always forget Maker because it's the most promising example, but they really made it possible to coordinate and align people that have nothing in common. They're anonymous. They're, like, distributed across the world, right? Like, the system works without anybody trusting each other. It's, like, crazy, right? And I looked a bit into it and I thought, like, this is super cool. Why is it, you know, why does it make sense and stuff? And then people started, you know, writing about it. And then I thought, like, okay, this makes all sense. And like the industry now is more at the point where we're like, okay, I think we understand what we do. Because like, you know, like every few months, yeah, more or less, you know, like every few months we realize, okay, what we did before was just like incredibly stupid. So like the Axie Infinity case, for example, everyone in the beginning, everyone was like, oh, this is genius. This is a new paradigm for gaming. Then it crashed down and then people said like, yeah, fuck, it was a Ponzi. And then I was like, okay.
It still exists though. And there's still players and Axies and everything. But do you really think we know what we do now and people trust the ecosystem more? I mean, take a look at last, what was it, 6 to 8 months? FTX, Celsius, all these things that happened this didn't create trust.
Yeah, but like, so with us, I would say, like, you know, the tokenomics community, because, you know, the things that went down is mainly like centralized finance, and everybody said like, yeah, but look at fucking MakerDAO and Curve and Aave and stuff, like they are stable, right? So that was basically, look, we told you so. Don't trust the centralized gurus, you know, don't trust the charismatic, you know, Twitter leader, you know, don't trust this bullshit, trust the solid system that's well designed. So I think that was like a nice learning for us.
So we couldn't find you on Twitter, or could we?
Now, as I want to start it on Twitter, but it's like, I don't have the time at the moment, but yes, I am, you know, like, I am on Twitter, obviously.
Striving to become one of the Twitter gurus.
I think that's a goal for like, yeah, next 6 months or so. But it's also annoying, you know, like I have a love and hate relationship with social media, but, you know, that's another topic.
Who doesn't? Sometimes it's too much. But most of the time it's fine. But sometimes it's just you need one day off. And that's fine, I think.
Yeah. But absolutely.
Talking about tokenomics, maybe I'm not sure how much our listeners know what you understand under tokenomics. And you said now twice you don't want a centralized system because they are doomed to fail. So how do you define tokenomics to yourself? And also, how do you make sure it's not becoming centralized around you and you're not becoming a Twitter guru setting up the next Ponzi?
Yeah, so for me, tokenomics is all about coordination. So tokenomics is really like using rewards and incentives to coordinate people to do something. You know, you as a founder, you have a goal, a value creation goal in the best case, and you take people and, you know, coordinate them towards the goal. There's like, I could give lots of like deep crypto examples, but like a really nice example is, for example, also Plastic Bank. They're like not really, you know, they're crypto enabled, there's a blockchain, but obviously they don't talk via like a crypto protocol or something. So they take coins, you know, tokens, invest, and they reward people to clean up beaches, clean up plastic, and you get a reward for it once you bring that plastic. And even, you know, backpackers and locals and all kinds of stuff, you know, that they participate. So they found a way to, like, you know, the traditional way of an NGO would be, okay, I take money, I pay locals, I have this hugely bureaucratic system where all that money flows to some point, like I lose 70% on the way, maybe there's corruption on the bottom. And, you know, like my resources are very inefficiently utilized on the ground. I have to set up ground operations and so on. In this case, of course, you still have like local communities and whatever, but in this case, you could potentially think, okay, I take, you know, tokens as a reward to incentivize people to clean up beaches, bring out that plastic. And then obviously I have donors and companies and governments that want clean beaches because of whatever goals. But the whole mechanism is much more decentralized, much more fluid. And that's really what I want to do with tokenomics. So I want to coordinate people towards a goal.
Another. Where does the value come from?
I mean, the value is created through that coordination. That's the most important point. So like ETH, for example, is a decentralized smart contract platform where you can build all kinds of stuff on it, right? So the value creation really lies in, I have different people, like the users and the stakers and validators, I coordinate them to provide this platform and people can build on top of it. And it's decentralized. Same with Bitcoin, right? Take rewards to incentivize people to do, to provide a digital store of value or payment system, right? So Bitcoin actually, I'm not a huge Bitcoin fan, but Bitcoin is also a great example of simple and beautiful design tokenomics.
Why not?
I'm just, you know, like I like innovation and I like platforms and infrastructures where people can build on, and I don't think Bitcoin's going to be that. And I also don't think like the Lightning network is going to be much better. Like, why would I use the Lightning network when I can use, you know, my bank account? So I'm not a, you know, I like the decentralization and the coordination, but, you know, it's not a must for me. And like that some things like game economies, they don't need decentralization. Why? Like, it makes no sense. You have a team that develops, you know.
But you said that you want these systems to be decentralized and that you need money of some kind in the systems, right? That's what you said when you explained it to your grandparents, that, okay, you build an economy with participants, with work, with money, and so on. So ETH, same as our fiat system, is not capped at some point. It's not limited. You can create as many ETH as you want in the future. Bitcoin is. So doesn't this play a role in your tokenomics systems?
Yeah, obviously. So, you know, like we... Lots of like older token economies got inspired by Bitcoin and had like a capped supply, which now is like it's almost over. Like nobody does a capped supply anymore because of that reason. Because most people want to build networks and ecosystems that expands, such as the, you know, the general economy, the world economy, and yeah, like if you want to have an expanding economy, more people coming in, then it's obviously very detrimental to have like a capped supply that's deflationary. Like if, for example, you have a token that people should spend, then like very bad to have like something where people will cling on to. And obviously, I mean, one reason why the gold standard, I think, was abolished was basically because like price distortions happen, like, you know, like your economy grows quickly, but your monetary supply stays the same. That's kind of, you know, that's going to mess in your economy. So that's why ETH, for example, is a very, at the moment, my gold standard for like solid, you know.
I would predict that some Bitcoin maxis would hardly disagree on that.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, like I try to stay away from any kind of maximalism, but it's, you know, like it's kind of basic economics, right? Like people that buy gold, they don't pay in their gold, right? So it's usually a hedge in a wealthy person portfolio against, you know, some form of risk, sometimes against inflation. Like it's not like you buy your gold and then you go around and spend it.
But it's also the question why. I mean, it's pretty heavy to run around with a gold bar in your pocket or in your handbag, but having your wallet with you is quite easy.
Yeah, I mean, could be an argument. Like, could be an argument, obviously.
I mean, we will see in the future if people will actually use their Bitcoin, for example, to pay a lot, or if it's just a store of value, but
I'm just for mine.
If times were shifting, and I know that you have been studying technology management, so this is also some kind of a shift, right, from the gold standard, which was like, yeah, the technology was to build the bars out of some gold nuggets, leading to a system where you could have something like gold, but totally easy to carry with you and to exchange.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, like I own obviously Bitcoin myself for exactly that reason. I don't own it to pay for it. I think that's going to be much better, you know, and much more adopted. I mean, you can use Monero, for example. It's mainly used for drug and money laundering and stuff, but it's a solid currency, right? And anything can become a currency, so it doesn't really matter, right? Like we can invent a currency. It's just the hardest part is to get to it, you know, people to adopt it. So that's pretty much, you know, that's pretty much the problem. But yeah, I don't believe that, you know, like money is, you know, like money and gold is something different. You know, like it, like people use gold to pay for stuff, but people use all kinds of like other currencies as well to pay for stuff. I mean, there's like a, in China, I think WeChat had like a virtual currency that got so powerful that the Communist Party had to, you know, basically forbid it and to put it into underground because it became such an important currency, and that was like no crypto, no token. So literally anything can become a currency. So I don't, that's why I don't necessarily believe in Bitcoin needing to be like that mega currency. Like you could even use ETH as Bitcoin. Like there's people, or like ETH as a currency. Lots of people say like, okay, it's like the ultrasound money narrative. I don't care about this either, right? Like if I can just spend what I want to spend, makes it much easier.
Fair point. UI is on, and user experience is not yet super, super great. And I didn't know about the WeChat story. I'll definitely look this up. It sounds really interesting. But I mean, fair point is also that there's been different kind of monies before. Like if we take a look, there were pearls that were money, there were stones that were money, and we had gold and silver and all this kind of stuff. But none of these were limited and easy to use in the same time and decentralized at the same time as well. So I think what we have right now, or the possibilities that we have right now, are pretty different than before.
I mean, that's why we love it, right? But what I think, you know, like the whole point, obviously, you know, if you talk to people that have no idea about our space, they always talk about, yeah, currency and when will your currency be adopted? And I'm like, I don't care if my currency becomes the world currency. That doesn't matter to me. I just want completely different things. You know, I want decentralized energy infrastructure and decentralized digital infrastructure and digital public goods, for example. Like these are all things that matter so much more to me than me paying with ETH. I can pay with fiat all day long. I don't care. I can even, you know, CB, you know, no, let's not get into this.
So what is it that you want then? Why did you enter Web3 and kind of what do you believe in the space?
I mean, it's like I really believe in these like large coordination games. So like decentralized, so like there's two worlds, for example, in energy we could look at. So one world is Tesla becoming the mega Google and of energy and owning all our energy infrastructure. Not necessarily my favorite scenario. The other scenario could be every single person becomes an energy producer by himself. So my dad, for example, he just bought 8 like these balcony solar panels, you know, and they will produce quite a bit of energy. So what we can do with tokenomics and with protocols is build like a digital public good. Anyone could connect their energy production into, there's some other constraints, of course, but in theory, that would be possible. And then we have a decentralized energy infrastructure that's permissionless. It's not controlled by anyone. It's controlled by the communities on the ground, for example, in my small town where I come from. And we can produce our own energy and we can, you know, like fund and invest and develop and co-govern these infrastructures. That's the future I want. What I don't want is Tesla owning the energy infrastructure on the ground. And there's like so many examples I could put out where we can think about this. So Web3 is really like, of course, like coordinating millions of people to co-own, co-govern, co-finance, co-develop. But it also just gives me a bit of like control and a tiny bit of ownership in my operations on the ground and doesn't give it to Tesla, for example. And that's really, you know.
How do you think we can get there? I mean, as far as I know, it's not that easy. Even if you buy these balcony solar panels, you're not allowed to do it in a large scale and you're not allowed to use it yourself. You have to put it in the net and then get some money back, I think, or somehow like this it works. So how do you think we get to a point in time where we can actually build these little communities that have their own tokenomics and are not in the legal gray zone in Germany?
Yeah, so I mean, like, even our government, which is, I think, no matter what government we have there, in technology-wise, extremely bad. And, you know, like, innovation is like, I don't know, is like the absolute worst, doesn't matter who's in power. But what we saw was basically, okay, like, just so the growth from, like, we need to change our energy, like, means of energy production. And we saw, okay, people said, like, okay, we're putting too many restrictions, too much bureaucracy on people. So, you know, in the beginning, you had, like, you needed trained personnel to put the solar panels on your house. That's like a legislation that's gone now. You can do it yourself. Now they're thinking of, okay, like, people need to start a company, like a little limited company to produce energy, to be an energy provider. Yeah. I think they're planning on cutting this. Like, you need to put it in your taxes. So you can imagine you go onto the digital portal of Elsta and then you're basically fucked. You have 300 pages. You don't understand anything. You have no fucking clue what's going on. You basically have to do the same thing like a large energy company, right? But they're also trying to slash that. So, you know, like, legislation is slowly moving forward. And at some point, people will be like, okay, like, give me now tools. How do we manage these energy ecosystems? There's centralized potential. There's decentralized potential. I think some elements need to be centralized. Some can be decentralized. So not a maxi in any direction. The most efficient system will win. But I think we can slowly move into that direction and then, you know, integrate all these people into these systems.
Okay.
Very optimistically. Obviously,
but also very, yeah, keen on building these systems within the system. And you seem not to be afraid that this will be stopped by some point.
I mean, if it's stopped, then it's stopped, right? But the thing is, like, technology is never stopped, you know, like, especially crypto just creates much more efficient markets, which is like the whole point, obviously, of tokenomics side. Like, we coordinated in creating markets that weren't possible before. And, you know, like, in economics, you have, like, different kinds of market failures where people don't interact and transact because, like, I don't trust you, so I'm not going to loan you money. But now I have systems in place where I can loan you money without even knowing you. So they are not very, very well developed, but technology is always going to win. Especially if it's, you know, like, if it's more efficient.
How do you ensure that you can trust a project? Like, if someone would now come to you and say, hey, Max, you're an expert in tokenomics and I'm new to the space. I just entered Web3. I've been, I don't know, to some events and I want to start something. I want to start buying something. And I want to have a diverse portfolio, not only Bitcoin, not only ETH, but some small stuff too. I mean, it's hopefully we're entering crypto spring soon, so this is not too far away. People will start this again and will buy their altcoins and in the end probably lose also some money. But how would you advise them? What should they do to make sure they are not trusting in a person, but can trust a project and not buying into a Ponzi?
Yeah, I mean, so we obviously don't have an hour, but like my line of reasoning is like more or less nine dimensions.
Wow. But
and it's like, you know, there's like some kind of frameworks we build for that, but they have like 100 questions or so. But really the thing is like two super simple questions to start with is like, you know, this coordination problem really focuses on, is this a solution, you know, and is the token used to create a solution that cannot be produced by a small entity, by a small company, or just by, you know, like individual behavior. Sounds a bit abstract in the end. Like, imagine the Helium network with all these miners everywhere. Imagine, you know, like you as a single entity or company would try to set this up. You would need to go into Spain and set up operations, contracts and licensing agreements with LA. You need to buy the hardware, right? So it's like, it's economically extremely, extremely expensive to set this up. So I'm like trying, okay, like I'm looking at these, you know, data economy, energy and stuff. And I look at, are they building like these hugely large protocols that have like a unique value proposition? For example, our idea about decentralized energy and, you know, like is is this project, or can it solve this in the future, what it claims? That's like an easy start. It's not a necessarily easy start, but it's like, there's like my test to find out if something solves like these really hard problems is if it creates a new user behavior or like a new human behavior that wasn't possible before, because like obviously mine or like using your computer energy to mine Bitcoin to ensure the network security, that wasn't a thing people did before. Or like,
but it is not anymore, not in Germany, not with the energy crisis.
Yeah, exactly. But Ethereum is the same. You stake your tokens to you know, secure a network. Or in Helium, you set up antennas and, you know, you prove that you provide coverage. And in Web2, it's the same. You know, like in Airbnb, you sleep at a stranger's place. Or in Uber, you ride with a stranger. These new behaviors unlock enormous economic potential. And that's where I start usually. It's like, is there a new user behavior? Is there like a new market design that could work? Is there something, you know, that wasn't possible before? And then you just look at the token and it's like, is the token essential in enabling this whole thing? You know, it's like ETH doesn't work without the token. Bitcoin neither. Helium doesn't work. So it's like the token really is the access key to the solution, but also like the fundamental reward for like value creation in this ecosystem. And then like 80% of the project missed this already. Like, I don't know, Arbitrum just launched the token. Some of the shittiest tokens are like, it's a really bad token design, horrible. Like, it's useless.
Okay. Yeah, it's a really futuristic point of view that you have, I think. Like, that people should think about how will it change your behavior, because no one actually wants to admit that the own behavior is changed, directed, manipulated by outside sources, you know? So I think with this approach that you have there, the first thing that you make people do is think about themselves and think about their own psyche. And that's maybe scary a bit, maybe.
Yeah, obviously it's, I mean, it could be scary if it's, for example, like a TikTok thing where there's like a, you know, a black box algorithm that just manipulates you. But in that case, it's obviously like I buy the miner in my house to make a reward. Like that was an easy sell for most crypto people, or like staking your ETH, right? And not people don't think about it, but these obviously new user behaviors, they create like massive opportunity, value creation, like on a different scale. Like the Ocean protocol, I don't think it's working very well, but it tries to unlock the data economy, people trading, selling, and curating data. And I'm just looking at this and like it's pretty much the Web2 approach. It's like, I don't know, are there network effects? Will this be a $1 billion business? And I tried to do the same. And I'm like, if Ocean protocol can unlock the, you know, the data economy, which is like always like, I don't know, 180 billion or trillions of dollars, you know, whatever McKinsey predicts, but it's a huge market. And then I'm trying to find out, can they achieve it? And if, you know, like if I don't think they can achieve it, then I'm like, okay, I'm not going to do it. That's kind
of. Yeah, but it says a lot about your psyche. I think if you think that something can make it and achieve it or not, because that depends on how much you think that the behaviors are already set and can't be changed, or the behaviors of a certain amount of people in that specific point are not that fixed yet and can be changed in the future. So it's tokenomics is more about psychology than I thought, actually.
Yeah. I mean, there's like that's why I don't think if there's a tokenomist that will tell you, I'm going to do your project alone and it's a complex project, I would be like, yeah, no. Because like obviously there's behavioral economics, there's economics, there's data science, computer science. I'm more like a product manager, so I think a lot about, okay, your product, your marketplace, like what are interactions happening there? How can we analyze it? What metrics do we need and stuff? Yeah. But there's like so many ways you could tackle this. And that's why it's so difficult as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. Maybe let's wrap it up slowly. And you've now talked a lot about tokenomics, and you obviously know a lot about it. But what's something that you don't know much about yet? Why would you like to know more about it?
You mean in tokenomics or general?
In general. Any kind of topic you like to pick.
There's a lot of stuff. So I generally enjoy economics. It sounds super nerd, but I would love to get the time to get more into algorithmic game theory. So that's decision making and how you can use computer science to influence decision making and these kinds of things. Because it's important for tokenomics as well, but that's just generally something I'm interested in. And that's something I don't necessarily know much about, but I should probably know about it.
Okay. Yeah. It sounds really like understanding how people decide something sounds really interesting, even though I think once you start this, you'll be gone for a couple of days at least and go down your own rabbit hole again.
Yeah.
And then you can ring us up and tell us when you're back in the real life.
I try to avoid that because I sometimes have these, you know, month-long benders of like just consuming information, and then I'm like, I should be probably creating more content, or I should be, you know, it's like always this balance of like just disappearing in your rabbit hole and then coming up and nobody recognizes you anymore. So
I think that's a challenge of founders in general, you, me, whoever, like, going forward with what you already do, going forward with your companies and your projects while still finding the time to learn, because we wouldn't be where we are if we wouldn't be curious and would want to know more about the world. But knowing more and learning more and experiencing more and exploring more, that all takes time.
Yeah. And it was that, you know, like, I don't know, like, I think you do web-free marketing, right? And that's already, there's like a million ways you could go into this. And then there's like, you know, I could be a tokenomist for like the energy projects, or I could focus on decentralized infrastructure. Or there's like always a million ways what I could do. And I'm also like quite bad in prioritizing what to do. So I'm always doing too much, which is, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a common trait among founders, a bit. And it doesn't make life easier, I'd say. Actually, having said this, give us 30 seconds of your time and tell us your blog tale. Any kind of interesting story that you would like to tell us, either about you or something you heard once upon a time?
Oh, yeah, I'm not necessarily prepared for that. Even you sent me an outline before. Yeah, so, okay, it's super nerd again, but that's like one of my favorite, like, I love this energy stuff, right? But like, I worked with a founder, like Age of Empires kind of creators, and they had this huge idea. And one scenario how the world could turn out in the future is that all IP, so intellectual property, becomes a protocol. And you could have the Gandalf character or Harry Potter is basically an NFT which functions
Did
as
you
an
just F- say Gandalf of Harry Potter?
No. So Gandalf or Harry Potter. For
okay,
example.
Sorry, I had to interrupt for no, that no. one.
Yeah, I'm a, you know, I'm big on Lord of the Rings, so I would, you know, like I would not say that, right? So basically, you know, like some people imagine the future, and I think that's like also one of my favorite futures. It's like, you know, all this stuff that lies in Disney or lies in the hands of like these corporations that guard, you know, this intellectual property can get accessible and can be built, you know, up on. So you can take the Gandalf IP and, you know, you build your own video game with it. And then you have a protocol, obviously, that gives some revenue to the original creator and so on. So that's like this hugely open, like, you know, creative playing field for everyone. Where you can create something and then you might get successful because there was a girl that wrote a love story between Draco Malfoy and Hermione, and it got hugely popular among fang fiction authors. You know, like, and basically these guys are thinking about it to open this up to, for her to, so she could write a book about it, and maybe, you know, like J.K. Rowling gets some money through the protocol and stuff. So that would be, I mean, I think that would be like an amazing, amazing future I like to think about.
There's a lot of fan fiction out there already. I'm stuck with the scenario that you just created. It doesn't end up for me.
I don't know how that happened, but it's like, I, you know, like there's so much creativity you could dig up if you provide the infrastructure to do it.
I think this is something we could have another episode about already, like only talk about intellectual property, if and how it exists and how we could monetize or tokenize it. But I think then we are into another half an hour, and I didn't book a slot that's long enough for this with you. So I would love to have you back for this topic eventually, but for now, I would say thank you very much for being our guest. Everyone out there, have a nice day. And if you need anything about tokenomics, then ask Max and he'll tell you.
Yes, great sentence. Cheers, was a lot of fun. Love.